You're listening to the Miles to Go podcast, the go-to source for travel tips, news, and reviews you can't afford to miss. Now, here's your host, travel expert Ed Pizza.
Welcome back to another episode of the Miles to Go podcast, where we bring you the latest travel news, tips, and tricks each week to help you save money and travel better. Up first this week, we're going to Iceland. Well, maybe not all of you guys, but I'm sure some of you have been thinking about Iceland, and I know our family has. So we're looking to plan a trip to Iceland, and you know, I knew that there weren't a bunch of chain hotels there, but I didn't know a ton more about how to plan the best trip. So I invited Tamara from We Three Travel and Vacation Mavens, who knows a ton about Iceland. She's going to walk us through some of the do's and don'ts on our segment today, and she's going to answer some popular questions like how long you should go for and how much it's going to cost. Really relevant questions for a trip to Iceland, trust me. After that, Jen is back with another deal segment to talk about recent changes to change fees at Frontier Airlines. And these are definitely changes that families will like. We're glad to have you guys listening again this week. If you have any questions or topics you'd like to suggest for a future episode, feel free to hit me up at ed@pizzainmotion.com or on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all at Pizza in Motion. And please subscribe to the show and leave us a rating on whatever platform you're listening. Those things make a huge difference in helping us reach out to new listeners. Now, let's talk Iceland. Back on the Miles to Go podcast, and we're bringing you another 10 minutes or less segment, but we're going to break the rules a bit because we're talking about Iceland. It's an aspirational place that so many folks want to go, including our family. It's a place my daughter has wanted to visit for about as many years as she knew what it was. And, you know, I started thinking about how I could plan a family trip there next year. And so I turned to who I think is the best expert I know on Iceland. She's been there many times herself. Tamara writes the We Three Travel blog, and she also is a fellow podcaster at Vacation Mavens. Tamara, how many times have you been to Iceland now?
I've been three. It feels like more, but I think it's because I've planned so many trips for other families as well. But I've been three, so experienced it different places and different seasons.
Yeah, and we'll be linking to all this in the show notes, but you guys should definitely know she has just a ton of information on her blog, and there's a lot to absorb when you talk about Iceland. And so, you know, for me, as somebody who, it's a place I've never been, I don't know a ton of folks who have been there, and so we're trying to figure out how to conquer this. And so if you think about it from the standpoint of we're planning, say, you know, it's either going to be a spring break trip or a summer trip. Let's go over some of the things that people really need to know when they're planning a trip to Iceland, especially the stuff that's different from a lot of the other places we all want to visit.
Well, definitely thinking about when you're going to go does make a huge difference in your experience, because if it's a summer trip, you're going to have pretty much 24 hours of daylight. So it gives you a lot of time to explore, a lot of things to do. The weather's, you know, a little bit warmer. It's, you know, you can still need to bundle up sometimes. But if you're going on spring break, you know, the weather is, it's going to be colder, it's going to be windier, it's still going to have, they really only have like two seasons in Iceland, it's summer and winter. And, you know, in the winter, it's certainly a lot different of an experience because there's hardly any daylight. And so in the spring, it's not too bad. You know, you're going to have it, you know, a decent amount of time to explore. But like, well, I was there in November a few years ago, and the sun rose about 9:30, 10 o'clock in the morning, and it set by around, you know, 3 in the afternoon. So you couldn't fit as much into your day because, right, you know, of that darkness. So it's definitely one of the things you have to think about. I think the other thing to think about is how much time you have and how comfortable you are moving around. So it's one of those destinations that I think a lot of people think, okay, I'm going to book a hotel for 5 nights in Reykjavik and we're, you know, going to see the whole country. But, you know, that's not the way it works. There's a lot of driving involved. And so if you want to see more, you're going to need to drive and kind of switch hotels every night, which becomes a little bit more of a challenge when you're planning, especially in the summer when there might be more limited availability with hotels. You know, your other choice is that you're going to stay in one place and do some day trips, but you're going to be covering a lot of the same ground going back and forth, back and forth. And so yeah. I usually ask people, you know, like, how comfortable are you moving, you know, every night or at least every couple of nights? And, you know, how comfortable are you spending, you know, how much time do you want to spend in a car each day? Like, are you willing to do?
Yeah, and I would say one of the few things that I know for certain about Iceland too is if you're one of those folks who's collecting miles and points to plan that dream vacation, Iceland is sort of a black hole when it comes to miles and points. Yeah. You'll find the occasional flights there on sort of the major carriers, but they're very few and far between, especially at the saver level from what I've been searching. But there's almost no points hotels, if you will, in Iceland, right?
Right. I mean, in downtown Reykjavik, you're going to find Canopy by Hilton. And I believe they're putting in an addition, which is Marriott, right?
Yep.
So there's a couple, but outside of the capital city, you're not going to find anything. So it's definitely a time where you might want to use your pay with points or, you know, some other type of way to fund that.
And did you find that Airbnb was also a reasonable alternative for folks looking to visit Iceland?
I mean, Airbnb is a great option for families, especially because the thing that you need to keep in mind for Iceland is that there are very few family rooms. I mean, you find that a lot in Europe and,
yeah,
you know, understanding that you're not going to squeeze four people into a hotel room the way that you can as easily in the US. But in Iceland, if there's a double room, that doesn't mean two double beds. That usually means two twin beds. And so seriously, it's either there's two twin beds or those are pushed together to be one, you know, double bed.
Yeah.
And so you will also sometimes find a family room that is a triple. So it'll be like a double bed and a single. Occasionally there might be a fourth one in there. I have a post on my site about some of the different hotels that do offer family rooms because, you know, what you come down to is that you have now two expensive hotel rooms. And if you're a family of five, you know, possibly even more. And so an Airbnb, you know, definitely works out the best in those situations. You know, otherwise, I mean, Airbnbs are not cheap either.
Right.
But if you're needing to get two rooms, then it's going to be a deal.
Yeah, and I'm a little Airbnb hesitant for that whole market of stuff. But I think in places like Iceland, it almost has to be something that's in your toolbox if you're going to effectively find lodging, especially if, as you say, you don't want the long drives every day and you might want to pick a few places to stop as you sort of make your way around.
Yeah, I mean, I've certainly done Airbnb. I've done three different ones in Reykjavik, and we've done more of a cabin out by the Golden Circle. You know, there are definitely a lot of these kind of vacation homes, vacation cabins that are available for rent out in different places. But the thing that you have to deal with then sometimes is, you know, just the check-in process, right? So a lot of them now will have the little keypad, you know, mm-hmm. to get the keys out. So it's not like you have to meet someone in particular, but just even, you know, figuring out what the different processes. Do you need to take out the garbage? You know, it's a lot to deal with for one night. And so that's where I find like the guest houses, you know, might be a little bit of a better option once you're out in the country.
No, that's a really good point. Again, some of the hesitancy I have with the Airbnb sort of a marketplace. You know, another sort of fallacy around Iceland that I hear from folks frequently is, you know, gosh, I found cheap airfare to get there. Like, this is going to be great. You know, I know a little bit about rental car pricing because I've looked, but I think you've got some great stuff on your site. Let's talk a little bit about what folks should expect when it comes to renting a car.
Oh, absolutely. And it's not just car rental. It's like everything. I really feel like the airlines have done a bit of a disservice with all of these discount airfares because there's this perception that it would be a cheap vacation and it's not. You know, like the only thing cheap about Iceland is getting there. Everything else is going to be expensive. Yeah, and you will see definitely when it comes to car rentals, you'll see some deals, you know, maybe like $400, something like that. But what you are not seeing usually is where the insurance that's required. And it's actually with some it's required, others it's just very, very, very highly recommended that you would get like things like ash and gravel damage, like things that you're certainly not getting like anything related to volcanoes when you're renting here in the US. But you'll drive on some gravel roads, you know, so you're going to get dings. It can, you know, hit your windshield. You know, there's definitely ash and other things that you might have to deal with, which seem more extreme. But even just pulling into parking lots at different attractions, like you see like giant potholes. I saw a car actually get just completely stuck in one where it must have just completely damaged the bottom of the car when I was there last. So I would not skimp on the insurance. And so that adds it up, you know, to at least 1,000, maybe more like 1,500 if you're doing an SUV for the, if you're doing it for a week. So definitely pricey.
Yeah. And that's more than I've paid for a rental car, I think, ever. And, you know, folks who listen here regularly, you'll be able to hear me on the Vacation Mavens podcast coming up talking about car rentals. And I normally take the coverage through my credit card. I have a variety of different ones that I prefer. But, you know, in this instance, especially when you get into things that are very specific, like ash and rock and stuff like that, we dealt with this in some of the places that we visited in Europe that were, you know, very specific climates. I'm not going to say always or never. I hate using words like that, but I would strongly hesitate to think that your car rental company, your car rental insurance with your credit card is going to have you covered for some of the really arcane scenarios that you're likely to encounter in Iceland.
Yeah, true. I've called about a couple of different things, and the answers that I've gotten from like American Express and from home insurance would be no, doesn't cover it.
Yeah, in a lot of cases, those don't even cover SUVs, and it sounds like the road quality there really puts you into that SUV sort of landscape.
I think you'll be more comfortable. I mean, the ring road that goes around the country, I think it was actually just this year that every portion of it is now paved. Oh, wow. But that doesn't mean that you're not going to go out onto some other roads. Like, and I'm not even talking about, they have a thing called the F roads, and those are roads that go into the interior that you can only access at certain times of the year. And you, if you're going to want to go there, you have to get a car that's rated for F roads, and otherwise you're not allowed to go on those roads. But even just pulling into some of the attractions or driving up, you know, just a small road, like those are going to be gravel. Those are going to be, you know, full of potholes perhaps. So it's really not a hard country to drive and get around, but you're definitely going to encounter some of that. And so you're either going to have to go really slow if you have, you know, a small economy car, or, you know, do a lot of swerving.
So if hotels are really expensive and car rentals are really expensive, I'm going to guess, just based on the remoteness of the island, that I probably need to budget a pretty decent amount of money for meals.
Yeah, meals are definitely expensive. And you're not going to find, I always say it's not really great for picky eaters, right? You're going to find a lot of fish, a lot of lamb, because you will see sheep everywhere. And the fish is amazing. It's delicious. But and they actually grow a fair number of vegetables there, because you have all this geothermal energy that they've harnessed. And you can actually visit some greenhouses where they're growing tomatoes and tropical fruit and things like that, which is kind of amazing. So the food, you know, can be very good. It can also be very basic. You know, you might just not find any place and have to stop at a rest area at a gas station and get something from their cafe. But, you know, I'm trying to think of an example, like maybe a basic like hamburger is going to be, you know, $15 to $20, you know, that kind of thing. So,
ouch.
Yeah. Yeah.
So if you think about a typical trip, if you will, like there's certain places, even though it sounds crazy, I've gone to Europe for a long weekend because the fares sort of, worked out that way, that it was affordable to do it. What's sort of like the shortest amount of time that you would think about going to Iceland, and what's that just right sort of number of days to make sure that you get to see a good amount of the things that there are to see?
I think the shortest I would do would be 3 days. And, you know, Iceland Air has their stopover program where you can stay, I believe, up to a week before you continue on. Actually, maybe longer than that. And you see a lot of people that come in and just do a long layover, and they take buses out to the Blue Lagoon, and they have that experience, and then they go back to the airport. Like, that is not Iceland. It's the most commercial, most touristy thing that you can do in Iceland. And it's, you know, it is man-made. It's like very, it's just so commercial. So please don't think that that's Iceland. And also don't even think that you're going to go and spend, you know, a day in Reykjavik and feel like you've been to Iceland, because, you know, it's a cute little small city, but Iceland is about the landscape. It's about the waterfalls, the hot springs, the black sand beaches, the glaciers. You know, like I always tell people, like, it's the land of ice and fire. You should get to experience a little bit of both of those, you know, whether it's something where you're seeing a volcano or going in a hot spring, or you're seeing, you know, icebergs or walking on a glacier, like really experience that landscape. And I feel like the least amount of time you need for that is 3 days. I think a nice sweet spot is 5 days, where you get a really nice taste of the country. And you can do that without going too far. You know, if you want to do 7 days, like 7 days is nice. There's what I call like the point of no return. Like if you're traveling along the South Coast, you know, you get to a point, you know, in your trip where you're either going to turn around and go back, or you need to keep on going. And if you're going to keep on going and make that whole loop, you really need like 2 weeks, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that, you know, I think Iceland is one of those places that I'm hoping I'll be able to visit multiple times with my kids, because, you know, when you said ice and fire, it really resonated with me. And that when we did Sicily, we climbed Mount Etna with the kids, and they were able to see, you know, steam coming out of fissures in the rocks from a live volcano. And, you know, 5 years later, they still remember that. And so I envision that those are some of the things that we'll get to see when we get to Iceland.
Oh, 100%. It is really one of the most amazing places on earth. And you have it, you know, all right there. It's so accessible. So, you know, you have what you might experience in Yellowstone, where you have all this geothermal activity with hot pots and geysers and hot springs and things like that. And then you know, not too far away have glaciers, and it's just gorgeous. And it, you know, there's so much to see and do there. My daughter's school, for the last few years, I just learned they're not doing it this year, which is disappointing, but they've taken an environmental science class trip to Iceland. And I'm like, I cannot imagine a better place to study that,
right?
You know, where you have, you know, earth being formed and just everything right there in front of you. At the same time, they have, you know, glaciers disappearing, which is kind of, I mean, you see the effects of climate change right before you. They actually just put up like a memorial to the first glacier that's completely disappeared.
Mm.
So, yeah.
Well, the land of ice and fire definitely beckons for our family. And if you're looking to plan a trip to Iceland, there's really no better place in my mind than to start at We3 Travel, which is Tamara's site. We'll be linking to it in the show notes.
Well, thank you.
She's got itineraries for 3 nights, 5 nights, 7 nights, things that can save you a bunch of time in your planning. And this is one of those places where you're going to want to make sure you're armed with information before you go. Thanks a ton for coming on. I know we could talk about this for an hour, but when you're not hopping on the podcast here with me, tell folks where they can find you.
Yeah. If you like to listen, then please come over to Vacation Mavens. We're a family travel podcast that I do with my co-host Kim Tate from Stuff Suitcase. And then you can also find me on we3travel.com. It's we, the number 3, travel, because we're a family of 3. And you can find me on social media, mostly under we3travel as well, on Instagram and Facebook and all the rest.
And Vacation Mavens recently recognized as one of the best travel podcasts by Alaska Airlines Magazine. Congratulations to you guys for that.
As I believe there was another one on that list that you might recognize, right?
We might have squeezed onto the list as well. It's great being mentioned in the same company with you guys from a family travel standpoint. Safe travels, and thanks a ton for being on with me today.
Thank you.
We will be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. Back on the Miles to Go podcast, and I've got Jen back with me from Deals We Like, who joins us on a weekly basis to talk about deals. Today, we're got a combination of deals and then also just things that are getting better in the world of travel. Jen and I are both big fans family travelers of airlines like Southwest and Frontier, and they've done a bunch of stuff recently, Frontier has, to really up their game when it comes to family travel, Jen.
I agree. I mean, they're really doing a nice job with their Kids Fly Free, and they just enhanced their change fee policy for the better. Well, many other airlines are charging more for change fees. Frontier is actually enhancing their policy for the customer. So it's really nice to see that they're making sure that, you know, they're being friendly, they're helping passengers out, the rules are not so strict as many of the other airlines, and it's great. So right now, actually, they change it. So if you're 60 days or more away from flying with them, you can change your flight for $0 change fee. That is pretty unheard of. I mean, Southwest is at any date up until 10 minutes before your flight, you can change or cancel. So that's a rarity. But compared to any other airline, Frontier is definitely like in second place when it comes to that flexibility. Many other airlines will charge you, you know, $150. So, you know, you have 4 tickets, family of 4, only being charged nothing. It's quite nice.
Yeah. And when you think about Frontier, between, you know, Kids Fly Free and Friends Fly Free and some of their, you know, specials where tickets are, you know, $19 one way, a change fee in a lot of cases for them wipes out all the value of your ticket. So this actually happened to me a couple of years ago on a Frontier flight where we found really cheap tickets and I ended up not being able to take them. And the change fee was far in excess of what it was going to cost, what the tickets cost me. So here, as long as you're changing more than 60 days out, which is still going to catch some people who have to change sooner than that. But for anybody changing more than 60 days out, there's no fee. So you can sort of like, if you're looking for something better, you can start stalking Frontier fare sales, which, I mean, gosh, there's one just about every week now.
Every week, I think every day. It's either like 99% off at penny fares, $20, you know, anything can happen that day. And then there's a new Frontier. It's like the Macy's one day sale. Every day is a one day sale with Frontier.
And I think it's also worth noting too that, you know, if you checked whether Frontier flew from your home city to a place that you really want to go to, and they didn't, you should definitely check again. The things that they have in common with Delta is the dartboard theory of, you know, new routes, and you'll see tons of new routes spin up, and then sometimes they'll go away quickly too. So
yes, you definitely I've seen that too.
Yeah, you definitely want to keep an eye on it because they're constantly changing the route map. So if you don't think that they have something available for your favorite city pair, you might be wrong. And a $0 change fee is a great addition to Friends Fly Free, which I still have a lot of trouble saying, and Kids Fly Free. And if you're not familiar with both of those, you can search through our previous podcast episodes to find out from Jen and I how you can take advantage of having a companion or a child fly for free when you're paying for one of these ultra low tickets, which, you know, when you add all those things up, really does make Frontier a competitor when it comes to family travel, doesn't it, Jen?
Absolutely. And, you know, with Frontier, if you do by chance have to change or, you know, cancel your flight the day before, your child's sick or something happened, as long as you use the right credit card that comes with travel insurance as well, you're covered on, you know, on that behalf. So, you know, there's many ways to make sure that you're not charged all these excessive fees that many of the airlines will charge.
Yeah. And let's be clear. Frontier still has plenty of fees. There are still plenty 100%. Of fees. So, you know, bag fees, seat fees, all that sort of stuff. But
you want water fee.
Yep. Yeah, pretty much. But you'll definitely find these new change fees to be very appetizing for family travel.
Absolutely.
Jen, thanks a bunch for touching base with us on this. I think this is a great addition for family travelers. When you're not hopping on talking deal segments with us, tell folks where they can find out more deals from you.
You can find me on my blog, dealswelike.com, and then any of the social media outlets, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, anything at dealswelike will bring you to me.
And you can find her here just about each and every week sharing her best deals with us and with you guys. Jen, thanks a bunch for being on. Safe travels.
Thanks. You too, Ed.
We will be right back on the Miles to Go podcast. Back to wrap up this week's show with the final two pennies. If you guys follow my blog, Pizza in Motion, you saw an unbelievable deal last week. American Airlines had economy class seats from LAX to Auckland, New Zealand for as little as 5,000 miles one way. That's a huge savings for a route where one-way flights and coach will sometimes reach the astronomical rate of 150,000 miles. Side note, don't ever pay that price. Some lucky folks were able to grab these before they went away, and some folks even found these low rates on other city pairs, such as flights to Sydney. Today's final two pennies isn't about making sure you're plugged in to keep an eye out for those deals, though a shameless plug to keep an eye on my blog and Twitter feed seem at least relevant appropriate here. Rather, the reminder is on the value of credit cards that earn flexible currency. In this instance, if you had one of the credit cards that earn Chase Ultimate Rewards points, you could take those super cheap flights you booked for maybe 10,000 AAdvantage miles apiece, and you could then go look for the perfect hotel redemption. So you divert those Ultimate Rewards points to a hotel chain like IHG, Marriott, or my favorite, Hyatt, to cover your stay. If you just had airline miles or just had hotel points, you might be stuck. And the flexibility of a currency like Chase Ultimate Rewards or American Express Membership Rewards really gives you the flexibility to push you to either direction based on what you find out there. And that sort of a setup would set you up perfectly with a vacation to New Zealand or Sydney, where your out-of-pocket costs for flights and hotels would be virtually nothing. And that's a pretty good win in my book. That's a full wrap on this week's show. A big thanks to Tamara and Jen for stopping by. And as always, thanks to producer Mike. Thanks also to you guys for tuning into this week's show. If you have any questions about Iceland or Frontier, you'll find links to Tamara's and Jen's posts in the show notes. And you can also drop me an email with any questions at ed@pizzainmotion.com. You can always hit me up on social media, Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, all at Pizza in Motion. And you can find me blogging at pizzainmotion.com. If you've listened this far, I have to believe that means you like what you're hearing. And if that is the case, please tell a friend and make sure you subscribe to get our episodes downloaded each and every week as soon as they're released. Until we upload again, we've got miles to go.